He was vaguely aware of Prime snarling at the pixie that came to fetch him to class until she fled. Conryu sent mental gratitude to the Skullamantic and fell back asleep. When he woke up again, it was an empty stomach that did it. He had no idea what time it was, though well after lunch seemed a fair guess. Conryu rolled out of bed, staggered into the bathroom, and let the naiad wash his hair and back. Clean clothes combined with the shower had him feeling almost human again. The next order of business was hunting up something to eat. The thought had barely crossed his mind when someone knocked. When he opened the door, he couldn't say what pleased him more, seeing Maria waiting outside or the overstuffed sandwich she had in her hands.
"Please say that's for me."
"It's for you. When you missed lunch, I figured you'd be hungry." Maria brushed past him and into his room. She looked around and shook her head. "What a mess."
"Give me a break. I had a busy day yesterday."
"Yeah, Dean Blaine gave me the short version. How'd it go?"
"Not as well as they hoped. You know I can't say much here, right?"
She nodded and handed him the sandwich, ham and cheese with extra mustard, just the way he liked it. Conryu took a bite and sighed.
"Have I told you lately that I love you?"
"It's been a few days, but I'll forgive you. The girls in your club were excited when I told them you'd gone to arrange an engine. You didn't forget, did you?"
"No, should be here by the end of the week."
"Are you really going to try and make it run on nothing but magic?"
"Sure, why not?"
He polished off the sandwich and found himself looking for a drink.
"Do you want all the reasons why not, or just the obvious ones?"
"I don't actually want any of them. I was just looking for a project to cheer Sonya up. Though the idea of a motorcycle with a magic engine sounds way cool."
Maria wiped a spot of mustard off his face.
"Well, it took you half the year, but you managed to incorporate mechanic work into your studies. I figured it would take longer."
He grinned.
"What time is it?"
"Around 3. You slept through all your classes."
He shrugged.
"Other than the one with Mrs. Umbra, I could take or leave the rest."
"Not if you want to graduate."
She had him there.
20 minutes after Maria left, a pixie arrived with a rolled-up message. He read it while she waited. It was short and to the point. "My office, now." Signed, Mrs. Umbra. Conryu handed the note back to the pixie, grabbed Prime and waved her out.
"After you."
He followed the tiny elemental out of the dorm, across the snow-covered field to the main hall. Once they were inside, he was surprised to head upstairs instead of to the basement. He'd assumed the head of dark magic would have her office downstairs. They left the classrooms and continued on past the administrative offices. Several secretaries stared at him as he passed by. But since he had the pixie guiding him, they must have assumed he had permission to be there. After what felt like a half-mile hike, they stopped in front of a black, rune-covered door. That was more like it. He almost didn't want to knock. Luck was on his side, and the door opened before he had to touch it. Beyond the door was a small office with a desk, chairs, and book-stuffed shelves. He restrained a sigh. Every time he expected to end up somewhere ominous, it ended up being normal. All the weird shit seemed to happen when he least expected it. Mrs. Umbra sat behind her desk. She waved him over to one of the empty chairs, and when he'd sat, she said,
"I heard all about it. How's your head?"
"Fine. I slept off the worst of the backlash. I don't remember it hurting that much when I summoned Cerberus."
"You were barely conscious that time. It's way worse when you're aware of what's happening."
"No kidding. But I survived. That's what counts."
"How did you manage the other 5 demons without losing consciousness?"
"Please don't get mad."
The wrinkles in her forehead deepened.
"Conryu?"
"I had Prime teach me the domination spell."
He winced, but she didn't blast him where he sat.
"I know I'm not supposed to study anything without your permission, but it was an emergency."
"Did it give you any trouble?"
"Not really. It was longer than the spells I've cast so far, but the increased power didn't bother me. I had a little trouble with this twisty flip thing you have to do with your offhand halfway through, but I figured it out after a couple practice runs. I'll be honest, it doesn't seem hard enough to be a 3rd-year spell."
She shook her head.
"That's because you're so much stronger than average. Domination requires you to channel 10 times as much energy as Cloak of Darkness, for example. The spells aren't the problem.
The reason it's a third-year spell is because it takes 2 years to build up enough capability with dark energy for most wizards to cast it and remain conscious.
Oh, I have to say it was way easier than using willpower to control the demons. Once I hit them with it, they went as docile as kittens. I wish I'd known it to begin with. Would have saved me one hell of a headache.
Mrs. Umbra groaned, opened her mouth like she was going to say something, then closed it again. After a moment, she said, "I hear you met Malice Kincaid."
"Don't get me started on her. Why is it that so many people feel the need to include a threat when they first speak to me?" And I told her she should be nicer to Kelsey.
Mrs. Umbra laughed and leaned back in her chair. When she'd wiped a tear from her eye, she asked, "How'd she take it?"
"Not seriously. I don't think I convinced her, but I still had to say something."
"Don't worry about it. You understand you can't talk to anyone about what happened yesterday, right?"
"Yeah, not that I really know all that much. Demons being summoned inside the city doesn't seem like the sort of thing the department would want getting around. I hate not being able to tell Maria, though. It feels like I'm lying to her."
"I'm familiar with that experience. If it's any consolation, it's not your fault you can't tell her."
"It's not, but thanks."
Conryu's chat with Mrs. Umbra ended with her promising to teach him more advanced spells, in such a tone that he broke out into a sweat. He went back to the dorm, ready for another nap. At the bottom of the steps, he found Kelsey standing outside his room.
"Hey."
She jumped and spun to face him.
"I thought you were inside."
"No, Mrs. Umbra wanted to talk with me.
How are you?"
"Worried about you. When you didn't come to class this morning, I figured you must have been sick."
She was kneading her hands and fidgeting. She really did seem concerned. He felt a little bad about worrying her. Not that he'd had much choice.
"It was a stomach bug. Something I ate didn't agree with me. I'm fine now. Would you like to come in?"
He opened the door and she ducked inside. Kelsey sat on the edge of the bed. Conryu put Prime on the desk and plopped down in his chair.
"So what did I miss?"
"Not much. We practiced circle casting the whole time. Mrs. Lenore was going to start our fusion magic lessons, but she said tomorrow would be fine."
"Since I wasn't there. Sorry."
"No, no, it's okay. I'm just excited to give it a try. What did Mrs. Umbra want?"
"Just to discuss what we are going to work on for the rest of the year. Boring stuff, really."
Yet another lie, but he didn't have any choice. Kelsey's hands trembled as she walked down the steps to dark magic. She'd gotten pretty good at working with her partner in the casting circle. Between them, they'd managed to dispel the light, but not shatter the sphere. It was a beginning, at least. Today she was supposed to start fusion training with Conryu. He was so strong, the idea terrified her. Why did she even agree to work with him? Because he was her friend. Maybe the only one she'd ever had. The evening before, when he'd invited her into his room, for a moment she'd feared her mother had been right and he was going to try something. But he couldn't have been more polite. She blew out a sigh and reached for the classroom door. Part of her was annoyed that he didn't try anything, and another part knew she'd be furious if he did. What a screwed-up way of thinking. Kelsey stepped inside and found she was the last one to arrive. Even the perpetually late Mrs. Lenore had arrived ahead of her. Her cheeks burned when everyone turned to look at her. Conryu just grinned and pulled out the chair beside him for her. She rushed to sit down.
"Okay, now that we're all here," Mrs. Lenore said, "we're going to try something different. Some of you, I've noticed, seem to have the two-person circle casting down, so you'll be trying three-person circles. Meg, you and Caitlin will continue as a pair. Conryu and Kelsey will try fusion casting."
Mrs. Lenore set about instructing the girls on a three-person circle. Kelsey tried to pay attention since she'd have to do it at some point as well, but she couldn't get her mind off Conryu. He sat beside her with the most indifferent expression. He clearly couldn't have cared less about circle casting. For him, it must be like a tiger listening to a bunch of house cats receive instructions on hunting mice. Once the circles were going, Mrs. Lenore motioned them over to the corner of the classroom. She set one of the glowing spheres on an empty table.
"So the way this is supposed to work is, Kelsey, you stand behind Conryu and put your hand on the center of his back. When he casts the spell, you'll feel like something is pulling at you.
You just need to relax and let your power flow so it melds with his. If this works the way it's supposed to, you two should create a more powerful result than Kanryu would on his own. Shall we give it a try?
Kelsey moved to stand behind him. She tried to dry the sweat off her hand, but it only lasted for a second. She put her palm on Conryu's back. He glanced over his shoulder.
Ready?
Yes.
It came out as more of a squeak than a real affirmative.
Here we go. He raised his hand. Darkness bind.
A thrum of power ran through her, shaking her to the bone. She could no longer make out what he was saying. The psychic vibrations increased with each word until he completed the spell. In her mind's eye, a deep, black pit appeared, and six glowing red eyes stared back at her. The pooling Mrs. Lenore described felt more like her soul being wrenched from her body. The darkness inside him was trying to devour her. Kelsey broke the connection and fled the room. She stumbled down the hall, her heart racing and her breath coming in gasps. A few feet from the door, she fell to her knees and tried not to hyperventilate as tears poured from her eyes. A hand on her back returned her to the moment. She looked up to find Mrs. Lenore staring at her.
What happened, dear?
Kelsey described the darkness and the eyes.
It was so overwhelming, I panicked. I'm sorry.
It's my fault. I didn't expect you to be able to see into his portal. Those eyes were Cerberus. Kanryu was forced to make a pact with him to keep minor demons from slipping through the gate every time he casts a spell. You don't need to be afraid. The demon dog can't affect anything in our world.
But it felt like he was trying to pull my soul out of my body.
I didn't expect that, either. Maybe I should have practiced this with Kanryu myself before I tried to instruct you.
Mrs. Lenore hung her head.
I'm a terrible teacher.
Now Kelsey felt equally bad about upsetting Mrs. Lenore, and jealous at the idea of someone else practicing with Kanryu. She straightened and pulled Mrs. Lenore with her.
I'm okay now. I'd like to give it another try. Are you sure? I don't want to force you.
She nodded once.
I'm sure.
Kanryu stared as Mrs. Lenore ran after Kelsey. He didn't know what had her so upset. Everything was going smoothly, then bang, she broke contact and ran off. It screwed up the spell, and now the glowing sphere sat on the table mocking him. While he had no doubt about his ability to destroy the thing on his own, that wasn't the point of the exercise. The other girls had stopped their practice and were glaring at him. People seemed to enjoy glaring at him, and he was getting sick of it. He hadn't done anything wrong. At least he didn't think he had. Finally, Kelsey and Mrs. Lenore returned. Kelsey's cheeks were red, and she'd been crying. He still couldn't figure out what had bothered her. She didn't say anything, simply moved around behind him and put her hand on his back.
Let's try again.
He looked at Mrs. Lenore, who nodded. Well, here goes.
Darkness bind, our power is one. Break and shatter.
He focused on the sphere and compelled the magic to affect nothing else. When he finished, Kelsey stiffened but didn't run. A black lance of energy shot out and struck the sphere. One second it was there, and the next not even a pile of metal shavings remained. He grinned. That's the way it was supposed to work. Kelsey took her hand off his back and peeked around him.
Where's the sphere?
Gone. We obliterated it.
Good work, partner.
He gave her hand a squeeze, and she managed a weak smile.
Let's call that good for today, you two, Mrs. Lenore said. Kelsey, why don't you try working with Meg and Caitlin on a trio casting?
Kelsey looked up at him, then nodded and went to join the other girls. When they were fully engrossed in their practice, Mrs. Lenore said,
She caught a glimpse of Cerberus and it scared her.
Having seen Cerberus up close, he understood how she might have had that reaction.
What did you say to calm her down?
Beats me. I'm glad she pulled it together, though.
How did the spell feel?
I didn't notice much difference. I know I'm not supposed to ask, but what did she score on the test?
I guess it couldn't hurt to tell you, but keep it to yourself.
She pulled a 900. Respectable, but not above average.
That's less than 10% of my full power.
Mrs. Lenore nodded.
We're just going through the motions here. I recognize that.
but I don't know what else to do.
Conryu didn't either. Maybe Mrs. Umbra would have some ideas. Class wrapped up, and the girls all left. 10 minutes later, Mrs. Umbra arrived. She had a scroll in her left hand, bigger than the one the pixie brought, but still not huge.
Did you bring me a present?
No. This is a diagram of how a normal wizard develops. She spread it out on the big desk, and when it tried to roll back up, she muttered something that made it go rigid. Now pay attention.
Conryu moved up beside her and examined the scroll. It didn't make for very exciting reading. There was a series of 4 bars, each more full than the last. Mrs. Umbra pointed at the first one.
This represents a typical first-year student. She would be able to use about 1/3 of her power safely by the end of the year. The percentage increases each year until the new wizard reaches her full potential in her final year. That is our most important task, shepherding young wizards through these critical first 4 years. We've chosen the spells and techniques we teach carefully so as not to overwhelm new wizards.
What does that mean for me?
It means following our standard curriculum is pointless. I don't need to ease you through the process, because for some reason you're already operating at full strength. If I taught you the most powerful spell I know, you could cast it without batting an eye. There's one problem. Regardless of its pointlessness, we only have the 1 lesson plan, and you'll graduate before the department approves a new one.
Conryu's headache was coming back. So, what, I just show up, put in my time, and pass whatever the final is?
Basically. Feel free to learn anything you like from your book. Just don't cast any new spells without me. The only reason I restricted you was for your safety. Now that it's clear you're in no danger, you may as well learn whatever you can.
An overwhelming urge to beat his head against the wall came over Conryu. Not only was he stuck learning a subject that didn't interest him, now his teacher tells him the whole process was pointless. If not for the law, he'd be just as well off studying at home in his spare time and coming in to take the tests. 4 years of his life flushed down the toilet to no apparent purpose. Fantastic. The rest of the week passed quickly. Conryu and Kelsey worked on fusion magic for 10 minutes every day before she went to practice circle casting with the other girls, leaving him free to study his infernal. There were still a lot of words he didn't know, and until he was fluent in the language, his dark magic potential remained limited. Sunday arrived at last, and with it his weekly visit with Angus. The boring visits used to annoy him. Now he hoped the professor didn't have any news for him, especially today as he was supposed to meet the supply train and collect the engine and tools Mr. Kane had arranged for him. He was a little nervous, not knowing what style of motor he'd find. Hopefully it would be something simple, without a lot of computer-controlled components he'd have to work around. Angus's door was open when he arrived, which was a good sign. Conryu poked his head in and relaxed when he found the professor alone.
"Please tell me you don't have any messages."
"No, though I'm curious how you made it out on your mission."
Angus looked at him all bright-eyed and eager.
"I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to say, so you'd better ask Mr. Kane about it. See you next week."
Conryu left the crestfallen professor behind and jogged toward the train platform. Maria said she was working with her light magic teacher today, so he didn't have to meet her until dinner. He didn't know what had happened last week, but Maria seemed more content than she had since winter break. She was also determined to be at the top of her class after finals. He smiled. No one could fault Maria's dedication when it came to schoolwork. He hated it, but when a bunch of crazy wizards wanted you dead, there wasn't much to be done. Not to mention, it seemed he'd be on call to lend the department a hand any time they needed him. That didn't seem right, but according to Mr. Kane, he was the only one available powerful enough to do what was required, at least until the northern incursion was sorted out, and God only knew how long that would be. Summer, at least. So for now, he was their only option. With any luck, it would be a temporary thing. After a short, cold walk, he arrived at the platform. His engine, a mercifully simple, single-cylinder job that looked like it came from a dirt bike, was sitting on a black pallet beside a large toolbox. Off to one side, the delivery people unloaded boxes of food and other supplies. One of the teachers, a water wizard in her mid-40s with a stern air about her,
was overseeing the unloading, marking items off a list as they were brought out. He was reluctant to bother her, but Kanryu had no idea how he was supposed to transport the engine without a forklift or something. Kanryu bit the bullet and walked over to the teacher.
"Excuse me?"
She looked at him, wearing the same expression with which you might regard a puppy that shit on the rug.
"I was told to expect you. You should know I don't approve of violating the no technology ban."
"Well, we're turning the engine into something that runs on magic, so that will make it a magic item when we're finished, and that won't break any rules, right?" She grunted.
"Anyway, how am I supposed to move it to our workshop?"
"No one explained to you how the lift pallets work?" He wanted to tell her that if someone had explained to him how the pallets worked, he wouldn't have asked her. But instead, he just shook his head. "Just touch the master rune. That's the biggest one on the pallet, and it will lift off the ground and follow you until you touch it again. Simple."
"Thank you, ma'am."
Kanryu followed her instructions and was soon trudging toward the club's shack with the pallet following along behind like a dog at heel. A path had been cut through the snow, so it only took him a few minutes to make the walk. When he arrived, steam was rising off the roof and the door was cracked open, a warm glow leaking out. The moment he opened the door, Sonya bounced to her feet and rushed over to the pallet. She pushed it in and touched the rune without so much as a hello. Crystal was seated on the floor, still looking glum about not making the team, her hands held out toward the fire orb that was heating the place. She stood up with obvious reluctance and ambled over to the pallet, which now rested on the ground.
"You've got it! Awesome!"
Sonya circled the engine, a huge smile on her face. She looked up at him.
"What now?"
"Now I'll tear it apart, clean everything, and show you how it all works. Unless you guys are familiar with engines already." Crystal shook her head.
"All I know is that they start when I turn the key. You really think we can make this thing run on magic?"
"I don't see why not. One type of energy should motivate it as well as another."
"That's the only reason we might fail is a lack of imagination," Sonya said. "And that's one thing I have plenty of."
Kanryu started working on the engine, and by the time noon rolled around, he had it mostly torn down. He explained what everything did as he went, and by the time they parted ways, the girls seemed confident they could have it going no problem. The Hunt for Mercia. Tara scratched the final rune in the side of her lantern. She'd been working on the artifact 12 hours a day, every day for the past 3 weeks. At last, the task was complete. She tossed her tiny chisel onto her workshop table and wiped the sweat from her forehead. She called the device a lantern because it almost exactly resembled an old-fashioned metal and glass hurricane lamp. The difference was this one didn't give off light. Instead, it would hold the blob of necroplasma that bounced incessantly against the unseen walls of the spell circle that still held it. With any luck, her creation would act like a compass, leading them to Mercia. After their failure last month to secure the boxes, they had no other hope than to locate Mercia and capture or kill her before she triggered the summoning. Failing that, Tara didn't want to think about it. Taking up the device, Tara went to the opposite side of the room and studied the erratic black blob as it struggled to escape its prison. You'd think the thing would wear out after a while, but so far it hadn't stopped moving since she captured it. She set the lantern beside the spell circle and frowned. Though preparing the artifact had taken the most time, transferring the necroplasma was the most difficult part of the project. The fact that she was completely unfamiliar with the substance didn't make the task any easier. Why hadn't she taken the time to consult with Kanryu's Skullamantic when it was here? She reluctantly admitted it was her overconfidence, thinking that they'd be able to retrieve the boxes and thus wouldn't have any need of the blob that had led to her mistaken judgment. Well, stuff happened. Now she had to deal with it. She removed the glass portion of the lantern, revealing the rune-inscribed chamber that would hold the blob. A deep breath cleared her mind, and she began a dark magic domination spell. It wasn't powerful enough to control a demon, but she should be able to use it to coax the necroplasma from one prison to the other. As she chanted, the blob finally went still. She completed the spell and willed the necroplasma to move left. When it complied, she gave herself a mental high five. A second command moved it to the opposite side of the circle.
So far, so good. Now was when it might get tricky. Using her thumb, she rubbed out a portion of the spell circle, just enough for the blob to pass through. She commanded it to move into the lantern.
The blob extended a pseudopod out of the gap, then inched out. It oozed over to the lantern and stopped. It fought her control. It was nothing but a fist-sized gob of mindless evil, and it still resisted her. Terra ground her teeth and focused all her will on the necroplasma.
Do it now!
With a final quiver, the blob entered the lantern. Terra slid the glass back in place and relaxed. The pressure in her mind receded, and she let out the breath she'd been holding. The blob slammed back and forth in its new prison, but her work had paid off. It couldn't escape. Terra allowed herself 10 minutes to recover from the transfer, then grabbed the lantern and headed for Chief Kane's office. It was already late afternoon, but she knew he'd want an update at once. The moment she stepped out of the elevator, the chief secretary waved her through. Terra pushed through the doors and found her boss standing at the window staring out over the city. It was pretty, with a fresh coating of snow over everything. She'd only been vaguely aware of the weather since she'd been sleeping in her office while she worked on the lantern.
"Sir?"
Orin turned to face her. He was nothing more than a silhouette standing in front of the bright window.
"Please tell me you have some good news."
"Well, I'm not sure if it's good or not, but I finished the artifact and transferred the necroplasma. We can begin the hunt first thing in the morning."
He stepped away from the window and sat in his chair. This crisis had aged him. There were new lines around his eyes, and she was certain he'd lost weight.
"That's something. Are you certain you can't start today?"
She shook her head. "Too close to nightfall. If we have to deal with the shadow beasts, it'll be better to do it in the daylight. Besides, I'm so tired I can't see straight. I'll get a good night's sleep and be ready to go in the morning."
He rubbed his face. "Of course. I didn't mean to sound unreasonable. It's just I need this sorted sooner rather than later."
"I think we all feel that way. At least I know I do. But there's only so much you can do in a day." She debated saying more, then shrugged. "Why don't you have an early quit, sir? Go home. See Shizuku. Take a little rest."
"No offense, but you look like hell."
His laugh held no amusement.
"That's better than I feel. I have some things to finish up, then I'll head out. Okay?"
"Yes, sir." Lynn, Terra, and Claire were gathered in the chief's office. Light poured through the window in an almost blinding glare. On the desk, the blob in Terra's lantern was still for once. The nasty thing didn't like the sun. Lynn wasn't all that thrilled to see it this morning, either. It meant it was hunting time again, and so far he hadn't been much use when dealing with these supernatural threats. Other than shooting a few zombies, he'd been more hindrance than help. Chief Kane peered at the lantern, then looked up at them.
"So this thing's going to lead you to Mercia?"
"That's the theory, according to Conryu's Scholomantic," Terra said. "I'm in no way ashamed to admit that this is all outside my area of expertise. However, given my complete lack of other ideas, I don't know what else to try."
"Don't give it a second thought. All avenues must be explored."
Chief Kane opened a drawer in his desk and pulled out a long box.
"Lynn, this is for you."
The chief opened the box, revealing a shiny silver pistol and 6 full clips. They looked like 9mm, the same as a service weapon.
"Thank you, sir, but I'm more familiar with my current weapon."
Chief Kane thumbed one of the cartridges out of its clip and tossed it to Lynn.
"Look at the bullet."
Lynn squinted at the tip. There was something drawn on it.
"Sir?" "Those are rune-marked bullets ordered from Chard Manufacturing. Magic bullets. I understand your weapon has been less than effective in your previous outings, so I made arrangements for an upgrade. The pistol is designed to handle the bullet's power. A standard weapon would explode the moment you fired it."
Lynn looked the bullet over again. An enchanted weapon. With this, he would be able to fight and have a hope of accomplishing something instead of hiding and letting Terra handle everything. That idea pleased him a great deal.
"Thank you, sir."
Lynn swapped his old pistol for the new one, then switched out the clips on the opposite side of the holster. The fit was a little tight, but not too bad. The four extra magazines went in his jacket pocket.
Now, Chief Kane got to his feet. Go find this psycho and bring her in. I'm not supposed to say this, but if she's not still breathing when you do, that's fine.
They left the chief's office and made their way down to the lobby and out to the waiting car. It was, as always lately, a bitterly cold day. Lin couldn't remember a winter this frigid in his 40-plus years of living in Sentinel City. He turned the heat all the way up and pulled out of his parking space. Beside him, Tara held her contraption with one hand and touched one of the numerous runes covering it with the other. The lantern lit up, and the blob poked up into the glass enclosure. He drove to the parking lot exit.
"What now?" "Give it a minute," Tara said.
A minute later, Lin asked,
"What now?"
She glared at him and tapped the lantern glass. The blob wobbled and leaned left.
"Go left."
Lin obliged, not daring to go too fast lest he miss a turn. In the back seat, Claire snorted,
"Do you really think that that little ball of snot knows where it's going?"
"If you have a better idea, I'd like to hear it," Tara said.
"Next right."
Lin made the turn and tried to ignore the ladies' bickering. He had yet to decide if they really didn't like each other or if arguing was just a habit. For the next hour, they drove at an agonizing pace through the crowded city streets, drawing honks and middle fingers from annoyed drivers. Eventually, they left the center of the city behind and headed into the manufacturing district on the outskirts. He drove past a cement factory, then a recycling plant, before Tara said,
"Stop."
Lin looked out the window at a run-down smelter. It looked like the place hadn't been used in years. A thick layer of soot covered the windows so that he couldn't see anything inside.
"This is the place," Claire said. "I can sense it."
Tara nodded and Lin pulled over and parked on the side of the road. They piled out of the car and stood looking at the huge building.
"You think she's here?"
Lin had his doubts. He couldn't imagine anyone living in a place like this.
"Don't judge a book by its cover."
Tara held up the lantern and the blob strained to get to the building.
"There's definitely something here.
With the right magic, you could turn the inside into a comfortable residence and no one would know from the outside." Lin drew his new gun and worked the slide, chambering one of the enchanted bullets.
"Well, let's check it out."
Tara led the group toward the only visible door on this side of the giant factory. The necroplasma struggled to escape, constantly lunging toward the deserted building. The crash of steel getting smashed into cubes at the recycling plant next door made it hard for her to concentrate, but Tara kept the words of a defensive spell on her lips. If this really was Mercia's base, then she expected a hard fight. Tara grabbed the doorknob, but it didn't budge. Lin moved closer, but Claire brushed him out of the way. She chanted in the language of Earth and flicked her wrist. The steel-cored door ripped free of its hinges and went flying. At least they wouldn't have to worry about anyone barring it behind them, and the noise from the plant covered anything they might do. Claire ducked through first, followed by Tara, with Lin bringing up the rear. The inside stank of grease and burnt metal. Thin shafts of light filtered through the filthy windows. Tara was afraid to summon fire globes in case something flammable still lingered in the building. It would be a shame to blow themselves up and do Mercia's work for her. Claire summoned a pair of globes using light magic, revealing a pair of massive crucibles hanging from a system of rails attached to the ceiling. Further down, the smelters sat cold and black, like giant lumps of coal.
"What now?"
Lin asked. Tara raised her lantern and watched the blob. It wanted to go deeper into the building, so she obliged, easing her way down the soot-covered path between the equipment. An occasional groan or pop echoed through the vast space as the sun heated the cold metal roof. She had to force herself not to look at every squeak and focus on the blob. If there was any threat, Claire and Lin would handle it. The necroplasma grew more frantic the deeper she went until it was positively berserk about a third of the way to the rear of the building, near a hydraulic pump that appeared to run the rail system.
"We're close. There must be something hidden nearby," Tara said.
Claire cast a seeing spell. The chill in the air changed from physical to psychic. Her casting must have triggered a trap. Something growled from Tara's left, followed a moment later by a snarl from her right. They were surrounded.
Back to back.
Tara dropped her lantern so she'd be free to cast. Lin dashed over and stood behind her, his pistol raised and ready. Claire reached them half a second later. Crystal protrusions covered her like a suit of armor. From the dark recesses between giant machines, glowing red eyes glared. A trio of hellhounds stepped into the light. Fire dripped from their jaws and black teeth like saliva. Behind her, Lin said,
I have two targets. Do I shoot?
Tara weighed the risk of blowing them to bits with the risk of getting torn apart. It didn't take long to make up her mind.
Yes.
The word had barely crossed her lips when Lin's pistol cracked, followed half a heartbeat later by an even bigger explosion. As if he'd fired a starting pistol, all hell broke loose. Tara chanted,
Flames of destruction incinerate my enemy! Fire blast!
And hurled flames. Claire enchanted a nearby chain and used it to flail at the hellhound nearest her while Lin's pistol cracked again and again. Tara's first target was pushed back until it slammed into a support column, a huge patch of skin charred and burned away. Despite the damage, the hellhound showed no sign of being out of the fight. The two uninjured hounds gathered themselves.
Flames of protection, appear before me. Firewall.
A 10-foot wall of blazing flames sprang up between them and the hounds.
Lin? I took out one, but I needed a full clip to do it. The second one decided to hide behind a pile of scrap. I can't get a clear shot.
Claire shifted and chanted. A loud clatter was followed by explosions and an even louder clatter.
We're clear on this side.
Lin spun to stand at her shoulder.
I'm lowering the firewall in 3, 2, 1.
She thrust her hands down, and the flames vanished. Behind it, the hellhounds were gone.
Shit. Claire?
Claire crouched down and rested her palm on the floor while muttering,
They're circling. 2 left and 1 right.
Lin, take the right.
Tara raised her hands.
Flames of destruction, answer my call.
Blue-white fire danced around her fingers, ready to be hurled at the first sign of the monsters.
They're coming!
Claire straightened and cast a spell of her own. The chain she'd used earlier stiffened into a spear that hung in the air above her. Lin's pistol spoke first. Tara didn't even have time to glance his way before the remaining two hounds leapt at them. She threw her hands forward, focusing all her power on the nearest demon. The inferno scoured away skin and flesh and bone, leaving nothing but a charred pile of ash. Claire's spear impaled the second hound and pinned it to the floor. The demon struggled but couldn't free itself. Tara pointed at the spear.
Light of heaven, burn away this darkness! Lightning blast!
A crackling bolt of electricity arced down the spear and into the hound, burning it from the inside out until it burst into a puff of black smoke.
Clear,
Lin said. Tara wiped the sweat from her brow. They'd survived the first test.
I only have 3 clips left, Lin said. I hope those bullets aren't expensive.
Only $100 apiece.
Claire bent down and touched the floor again, chanting in the language of Earth. While she was casting, Tara retrieved the lantern. Her magic had protected the glass from the drop, leaving the necroplasma still trapped and growing more agitated by the second.
There's a large space under the floor.
Claire straightened.
It's 3/4 of the size of the factory. I can't get a sense of what's in it.
Are you being blocked, or is it just too hard to say for sure? Tara asked.
There's definitely some sort of ward interfering with my earth magic. All I can tell is a rough idea of size and depth.
So we're going in blind.
Lin slapped a fresh clip into his pistol.
Believe it or not, Tara said. That's a good thing. There must be something important down there if Mercia spent time and magic to protect it.
I believe it not. If there's one thing I've learned in my years as a cop, it's that going into a situation blind is the single most likely thing to get you killed.
We'll just have to hope you're wrong, because we're going down there just as soon as we find the entrance.
Found the release.
Claire pulled something behind the pump. A vibration ran through the whole structure as the floor slid open, revealing a long staircase. Tara studied the path down.
I don't see any traps from here.
I jammed the lever with a piece of scrap.
Claire gestured, and the light globes flew down the stairs. They'd been hacked out of the bedrock and were far too narrow for Tara's taste.
Those almost look like someone carved them by hand. Either that or they were made by an unskilled earth magic wizard. I did better work as a freshman.
Tara looked at Claire. Do you want to take the lead? You have the best chance of detecting a trap underground. Claire nodded and started down the steps.
Tara followed, picking her way down the narrow path while holding the lantern. The stone had a slight sheen of moisture that made the steps even more treacherous.
Lynn brought up the rear. When Tara looked back, she found him looking over his shoulder more than ahead. They moved ever deeper into the darkness. Soon the light from behind them vanished, and they had nothing but Claire's globes to show them the way. If they had to fight shadow beasts with no sun to weaken them, they might be in trouble. She grit her teeth and kept going. Tara knew going into this it was risky. The three of them would deal with whatever they had to in order to keep Mercia from activating the boxes.
It levels out up ahead.
Claire's voice echoed in the narrow stairway. Tara picked up her pace, and soon she and Lynn joined Claire in a wide-open space. At the center rested a stone table and a spotlight.
This must be where Mercia sacrificed those unfortunate people to create the necroplasma.
You were always a clever woman, Tara.
Mercia's voice filled the chamber. An illusion of her head appeared in the air above the table.
It's a shame I couldn't be there to greet you in person. We could have had a reunion.
We know what you're planning, and you won't succeed, Tara said.
Mercia laughed.
And who's going to stop me? You three? Stuck in a hole with no way out?
The floor shook as the stairs collapsed, sealing them in. Claire ran back, but flinched away a few feet from the rubble.
There's a dark magic barrier. If not us, then someone else. The department will not let you get away with this.
Tara clenched her fists so hard her nails cut into her palm.
Your faith in your employer is charming but misplaced. The government doesn't have enough wizards to put out all the fires burning in the Alliance. Once you're dead, there will be no one to stand in my way. Have fun playing with my servants.
Mercia's head flickered and faded away. The floor under Tara's feet shook again, harder this time. Lynn grabbed the neck of her robe and yanked her back. A second later, a black slab shot up to the ceiling, followed by another and another. Hundreds of them filled the chamber, creating a maze with the table in the center.
Thanks, Tara straightened her robe. No problem. So how do we get out of here?
Lynn eyed the imposing black structure and frowned.
Not the way we came in, that's for sure.
Claire joined them near the entrance of the maze.
I couldn't so much as crack the barrier she put up. If we can't dispel it, then I can't clear the stairs.
Our options appear quite limited, Lynn said.
If by that you mean we only have one, then I agree.
Tara rubbed the bridge of her nose.
My guess is that table, or perhaps more accurately, altar, is the key holding all the wards and constructs down here together. If we destroy it, maybe we have a chance.
That's a lot of guesses.
Claire glared at the maze as if trying to knock it down with sheer force of will.
Guesses are all I have at this point.
Tara set the lantern down and pointed at the necroplasma bouncing around inside.
This thing's done enough damage. Light of heaven, burn away this darkness. Lightning blast.
A pencil-thin beam of electricity shot out, shattered the glass, and incinerated the blob.
Feel better? Lynn asked.
Not really. Come on.
This time Tara took the lead, with Lynn in the center and Claire bringing up the rear. Tara claimed it was to allow him to quickly engage an enemy to the front or back, but Lynn suspected she just wanted him in the safest place since he was the weakest member of the group. He couldn't even argue. His new gun let him do some damage, but it lacked the versatility of true magic. All around them, warped images followed along. The black stone walls were shiny and reflective, like funhouse mirrors, only without the fun. Everywhere he looked, it was like something was moving. Lynn didn't know how to separate the false movement from a potentially real threat. He was really starting to regret that transfer just now. The first turn they came to was a left. 2 paces later, they reached a 3-way intersection. Nothing distinguished one choice from another in his eyes. Tara took the right, looking more confident than he felt. Lynn took one step after her. Another rumble shook the floor and a black panel shot up, separating them from Claire. The maze went pitch black as the light orb died. Tara hissed a spell and a reddish-orange fireball appeared, filling the air with light. Lynn wrapped the grip of his pistol on the wall, drawing a dull thud.
"Claire!"
Tara shouted. Lynn held his breath, but only silence filled the air. Further shouts brought identical results. He groped around where the walls intersected, but they fit so tight he couldn't so much as slip a fingernail between them.
"Shit!"
Tara slammed her fist into the wall and her fireball flared brighter.
"That sums up our situation beautifully. What now?"
Tara sighed. "We keep moving forward. It's not like we have a lot of other options." With those words of reassurance, they set out once more. Lynn stayed as close as possible without stepping on the heels of her shoes. Whatever else happened, he didn't want to be trapped alone in the darkness. He was the only one that couldn't make his own light.
"I'm never leaving the car without my flashlight again," he muttered.
"What?"
"Nothing. Think Claire's all right?"
"I hope so. She's a stronger wizard than me, so if she's defeated, then we're screwed."
"You're not very good at offering reassurances, are you?"
They came to another intersection, and Lynn practically draped himself over Tara when they went through it.
"Do you need reassuring?"
An explosion sounded from back the way they'd come.
"I do now."
"Fuck!"
Claire slammed her fist into the black slab separating her from Lynn and Tara. She made no impression on the unyielding substance. Claire didn't know what the slabs were made of, but it wasn't stone. If Mercia had used rock, she'd have knocked the maze flat with a simple spell. As it was, her earth magic didn't so much as touch the stuff. She ground her teeth and turned her back on the barrier. It wasn't like she didn't have options. There were two other ways to proceed. The question was, which one led her out of this maze? Straight seemed most likely to take her in the same general direction as her companions, so she went that way. Half a dozen steps later, a chill presence approached from behind. She spun as a black minotaur lumbered into view. It towered 10 feet above her with curving black horns that sprouted from its bull head. Though it was clear what the construct was supposed to be, the minotaur more closely resembled an unskilled child's attempt to make one from clay. The basic shape was correct, but the details were either off or non-existent. It looked like it was made of pure dark magic, but Claire had never heard of such a thing. The minotaur stomped the floor and lowered its head. Nothing subtle there. Claire held her hand palm down.
"O Mother of Earth and Stone, form a weapon to protect your daughter. Earth Spear."
When the minotaur charged, Claire punched out at it. The ground shifted, and a 2-foot diameter spear of stone burst up through the floor and into the monster's chest. The force of its charge battled the power of her spell, and it was sent flying back. For an instant after impact, the darkness was pushed aside, revealing bronze underneath. So it wasn't a construct of pure dark magic, but a golem covered in the stuff to protect it from magic. Lucky for her, it couldn't protect the statue from impact. The minotaur picked itself up off the ground, seeming no worse for the tumble. She needed to scrape the dark magic off in order to blast the statue apart. Unfortunately, it recovered so fast she didn't have time to cast another spell before the gap she opened sealed itself. The black statue pawed the ground again. It would drain her, but Claire saw only one option. She placed both hands on the ground.
"O Mother Earth, give birth to a child of stone to serve this unworthy wizard. Stone Behemoth!"
The floor shook like an earthquake as a humanoid figure of solid stone pulled itself from the ground. The maze spun around her as she fought the after-effects of casting 2 powerful spells in such close succession. Her behemoth was even cruder in appearance than the minotaur, but it equaled the statue in mass and height. The 2 constructs came together, fingers locked, chest to chest. Their feet dug into the ground as they pushed and stomped. It was an even match, but her spell had a limited duration. If she couldn't defeat the minotaur before it ended, she'd be on her own again. The maze finally stopped spinning, so she prepared her next spell. She gathered power slowly to avoid another bout of dizziness. Once she was prepared, Claire sent a mental command to her behemoth to tear the dark coating off the Minotaur. The stone construct formed a mouth in its crude head and bit into the Minotaur's neck. It pulled back with a mouthful of darkness, stretching the covering like rubber until it tore, revealing a patch of bronze.
"Shatter and collapse, Earthbreaker!"
She hurled a shard of earth energy at the exposed metal the moment it appeared. Her spell struck before the dark magic sealed up. The Minotaur trembled. Its left arm and head fell to the floor and smashed to pieces. What remained of its body continued to struggle.
"Crush it, Behemoth!"
Massive fists like pile drivers rose and fell, blasting off chunks of the statue with each impact until nothing remained but a pile of rubble. Only seconds later, the Behemoth crumbled on top of it. Her spell had lasted just long enough. Claire slumped to the floor, her body trembling and exhausted. The booms and crashes finally ended. Lin wasn't sure if that was a good thing or not, and when he'd asked Terra, he'd gotten only stony silence in reply. After that, he hadn't dared ask if they were lost. He thought they were. In fact, he thought the walls of the maze were shifting behind them. Now that the battle had ended, maybe he'd hear if one of the black slabs rose or fell. They took another right, and after 15 steps came to a dead end. Terra punched the wall, then massaged her hand. Lin kept quiet while she paced the narrow path. When it became painfully obvious she had no idea what to do next, he said,
"I think the panels are shifting."
"I wouldn't be surprised.
Their rise and fall is controlled by magic, right?"
He was working out his thoughts as he spoke. Lin knew next to nothing about magic, so the process was slow. Terra finally stopped and looked at him.
"Yeah, what about it?" "Well, if magic controls them, why can't you mimic the spell to make the one you want go down?"
She opened her mouth, then closed it without comment. It was a stupid idea. He should have kept his mouth shut.
"That's not a terrible idea."
Lin must have misheard.
"It isn't? In fact, it's brilliant. I'm not sure why I didn't think of it myself. Too busy thinking about how to find our way through the maze to consider anything else, I guess."
She smacked her forehead and muttered a seeing spell. He didn't know what the words meant, but he'd heard them often enough to recognize it. Terra worked her way slowly along the path, her gaze focused on the junction between the panels and the floor. He wished he could see what she saw, just once. At last, she stopped at the panel blocking their path.
"It's so simple, I feel like an idiot."
She cast a short spell and dark energy gathered around her hand. She tapped the wall, and it slid down into the floor.
"You did it."
She shook her head.
"I claim no credit. It was your idea. Let's go."
Terra made a straight line for the center of the maze, tapping each wall as needed to open the way. In less than 5 minutes, the final wall slid down, revealing a 30-by-30-yard space with the altar in the middle. They stepped into the square, and Terra nodded.
"Just as I thought, all the magic originates from that altar. Once we destroy it, the magic holding the panels up will fade along with the barriers."
Lin pointed his pistol at the stone slab, but Terra raised her hand. He lowered his weapon.
"What?" "Your bullets don't have enough punch for this job. I..."
A tortured moan cut her off in mid-sentence. From behind the altar, a corpse clambered to its feet and turned to face them. It wore leather biker clothes and had black pits for eyes.
"Does that zombie look familiar?"
Lin asked.
"It's one of the black skulls. And it's not a zombie. There's too much dark energy in it."
Lin gave the undead thing a second look.
"If it's not a zombie, what is it?"
The dead skull leaned toward them like it was about to fall over. Then it charged, way faster than the zombies he'd fought before.
"Firewall!"
The heat from the wall seared Lin's face and forced him to take a step back. The undead burst through the wall of flames with little more than a few scorch marks. Lin tried to draw a bead on it, but the thing moved too erratically. He jumped back to avoid a backhand and fired off a pair of rounds. The first missed, but the second hit its left shoulder. The enchanted bullet exploded, tearing a chunk out of it. Inside, the body was flowing darkness like necroplasma.
"Light of heaven, burn away this darkness! Lightning blast!"
Terra's blast sent the creature sailing back through the firewall. She gestured, and the flames vanished. They hadn't been very effective anyway, and Lin preferred being able to see.
"You okay?" Terra asked.
He nodded.
"Damn, that thing is fast."
The creature had skidded to a stop near the altar. It surged to its feet. The wound he'd put in its shoulder was already closing.
"How do we kill it?"
Lin asked.
"Excellent question. Try to take out its legs while I think of an answer."
The undead charged again.
How was he supposed to hit something moving like that monster's churning legs? He'd barely hit its body.
He fired a shot at its hip, but it lunged to the side. Lin had its full attention now. He backpedaled and shot. Fireballs burst all around the thing, but none of them made a solid hit. It was only yards away, its open mouth revealing inhuman fangs. Lin gave up on its legs and took aim at that open mouth.
Only one shot left, so he'd better make it count.
He squeezed the trigger and its head disappeared in a ball of flame. The still-moving body stumbled past him. Lin ejected his empty clip and slapped a fresh one in. When the smoke around the undead's head cleared, it revealed a featureless black oval that immediately sank back into the body. The undead stopped staggering and oriented on him, the lack of a head seeming to pose no difficulties for it. Lin had two clips left. Hopefully, it would be enough. The moment Terra saw the black blob that served as the creature's head, she knew what Mercia had done.
"Lin, I know how to kill it."
He glanced at her, the relief in his expression palpable.
"Don't keep me in suspense. You need to blow away the flesh and expose the faceless one inside so I can sear it away."
Lin grimaced, then nodded before returning his full attention to the quickly recovering undead. He raised his pistol and took aim.
"Flames of destruction, hear my call."
Terra opened a path to the realm of fire. Maintaining it would tire her more quickly, but she wouldn't have to keep chanting the primary phrase each time she wanted to cast her spell. Only the words of shaping would be necessary. Lin fired, and the enchanted bullet blew the undead's arm off, revealing the skinny black twig that served the faceless one.
"Fire arrow."
She thrust her hand forward and a yard-long bolt of blue flame shot out, incinerating the arm before it withdrew back into the body. The faceless one let out a moan. She doubted the thing felt pain, but to have a portion of its essence burned away must have had some effect. It charged again, this time at her. As Lin said, it was fast, but the damage had slowed it by half a step, and she managed to dodge a clubbing blow from its remaining arm. It stopped to regroup. And the moment it did, Lin fired again, this time blowing off its right leg below the knee.
"Fire arrow!"
Another section of the monster was burned away. It bounced in place and flailed with its remaining arm. Lin raised his pistol again, but she lowered it. It couldn't move or attack them now. Terra could finish it herself and save a few of Lin's precious bullets. Terra raised her hands and sighted through them, centering the bouncing undead.
"Flames of deepest earth, consume all things in your path. Flames of creation and flames of destruction, rise and devour. Volcanic core."
The ground shook and a pillar of glowing white flames blasted up through the hobbling monster. Everything was burned away. Flesh, bone, and darkness were all consumed by the pure white flames. When nothing remained but her own magic in the pyre, she lowered her hands and ended the spell. Sweat plastered her hair to her face, and she stumbled when she tried to take a step. Lin caught her and eased her to the ground.
"Thanks."
He nodded and sat beside her.
"That was impressive. How come you didn't use that spell to start with?"
Terra blew out a sigh. She was right on the edge of backlash. If that spell hadn't ended it, they would have been fully screwed.
"It's too slow to hit a moving target, and I can only cast it once before I need to take a long rest." "Well, since there's nothing trying to kill us at the moment, I'd say you've earned that rest."
Lin gave her a pat on the back.
"Thanks, but I'm worried about Claire. It seems like she should have caught up to us by now. If she didn't figure out how to lower the panels, she's probably still wandering around lost. We certainly would be."
"I guess, but I'm in no shape to do anything about it one way or the other." Terra allowed herself a full 3 hours to recover from the battle. Even in the sunless chamber, she had an excellent sense of time. After 4 years at the academy, she'd mastered telling time in her head. It was a necessity if you wanted to arrive anywhere when you were supposed to, and a useful trick for wizards, some of whose spells lasted for a specific length. She climbed to her feet and stretched. The weakness and dizziness had passed, and her body felt strong enough to channel magic again. Lin joined her, and together they eyed the altar.